My name is Vittorio Bertozzi. I am a principal technical evangelist in the Windows Azure evangelism team. You may have heard my name for things I'm not proud of, but also for the fact that I work a lot in identity, and I've been doing this for many years. For the last few months, I've been the lucky winner of the software as a service evangelism for Windows Azure as well. So I've been doing that. And today I'm going to share part of that experience with you. And before we go further, I have to ask you the classic, how many of you guys already developed applications with Windows Azure? Yep, excellent. So, a prerequisite of this session is actually to be fairly familiar with the Windows Azure platform, but never fear, because I knew that this would have been the case. So instead of hitting you with 1 hour and 15 minutes, we have 1 hour and 15 minutes, right? At what time do we finish? Thank you. You know, I knew it. I just wanted to put you in the spotlight. Since I spent 1 hour and 15 minutes here, it's now your turn. Excellent. Sorry for this little... That's just for helping you to digest what you ate today so that you don't fall asleep. So since I knew this, instead of hitting you with many implementation details, I'm going to jump between architecture, let's say looking at the problem per se, and looking at the solution so that... Even if you don't know the details, like I'm not promising you that you will understand everything, because if you never played with Windows Azure, there are parts that will simply, you'll be, what is he talking about? But I can promise you that modulo my very thick accent, for which I apologize, for the architectural part, you will understand. Also, I know that I'm in Belgium, so I really shouldn't do this, but I'll give it a try. Who among you would like to surprise us with a definition of a software as a service? You can't fault me for not trying. So, software as a service is not in architecture. It is a business model. It's simply the idea that I want to deliver a functionality, and how do I do that? I distribute to my customers a URL, and that's all they need for accessing the functionality that I want to implement. Now, I am oversimplifying, but you get my point. That is a business model, because it's not even imposing an architecture. I can have many architectures that supports that. Also, software as a service is not intrinsically tied to cloud. I see some white hair around, so I guess that you have been in the industry long enough to have heard the buzzword well before cloud became a darling of our marketing departments. So here I'll try to tie the two things together and show you why very often you see those two things together, because they are actually working well. If there will be one thing that you will retain from this merry 1 hour and 15 minutes, now 1 hour and 10 minutes, walking out the door, I would like you to think of this, that the Windows Azure platform and platform as a service in general makes it easier for you to write a software as a service application. I cannot promise you that makes it easy, because the problem is as complicated as the business requires. Like if you are building a software as a service solution, unless you are doing something trivially easy, which is always the case, here these are trivially easy, then usually you'll have to deal with a fairly complex problematics. If anything, just keeping your tenants separated. So if you'd start from scratch, it would be so much harder. With a platform as a service approach, this thing becomes at least manageable. And first I'm going to show you that. And then I'm going to spend the rest of the time exploring one concrete example. One big end-to-end sample which we created, which we tried to make as realistic as possible, and we'll use that sample for exploring our solution, understanding the problem space, let's say, the fact that we did a certain solution, points to the generic problems you can find, and also seeing, since we have Microsoft, a word from our sponsor, also how you can solve those specific issues in the Windows Azure platform. Is that a deal? Good. If it isn't, you are still on time to enjoy the fantastic Ingo session, which is taking place in this very moment. So don't wait. I wanted to call your bluff. Okay. I don't know how to pronounce this thing and still retain my employment status, so I won't. Let's say that you actually have this fantastic idea, which is you have this idea for a software as a service application. You think that this functionality is going to be extremely useful, and it's perfectly tied for doing the software as a service deployment model. So substantially here, you need to do something which goes between your user typing that URL and hitting enter and your functionality to come out. Now, if you start from scratch, and let me represent your baseline, your platform, as like a terrain. If you start from scratch, you have to do pretty much everything. So let's go back to something like, I don't know, 7, 10 years ago, maybe even earlier. And you have this idea, you want to deliver it as a service. What do you have to do? Well, here, there's a collection of things you have to think about. You have to think about literally everything. So let's go from the bottom up. Actually, let's also zoom, since no screen is ever big enough if you are egocentric like me. Sorry. It's all true. Ask my wife. So if you start from the bottom, first, you need to start worrying about your networking infrastructure, because that request that comes from the browser needs to be routed somewhere. And if you have any hopes of doing any significant money, you better have something pretty robust, because people will hit your endpoint pretty hard. Then you move up and you have to think about storage. With storage, I actually mean literally the machines, the disks, like the famous RAIDs, all these kind of things. That's all on your shoulders. And those things live within servers that you have to buy, that you have to decommission when they become old, typically 15 days after you bought them. That's what is called the capital expense. And you need to keep the room at a normal temperature, otherwise your administrator will die, your server will die, not good. So you have to think about maintaining all these in operation. And on top of these, operating systems. Ever heard of a Patch Tuesday thing? How many of you guys are IT pros? One, two. Usually, I would discourage you to stay here because, hey, developer, what are you doing here? But today, since I'm going to talk about fluffy architecture, you are welcome to stay. Great. And an operating system, you know what that means to maintain it. It means keeping it patched. It means keeping it operational. So it's all on your shoulders. On top of this, you need some kind of middleware. Middleware could be, for example, the software that you use for putting your cluster together, the software that you use for managing your NLBs and similar. On top of this, you need a runtime. You need some way of executing the logic that you will be writing. So, I don't know, if we are staying like the 10 years ago, VB is a good example, or maybe Java. Today, of course, it would be .NET. Why not? And then finally, after you went through all this length, and I'm doing this purposefully, let's try it again, purposefully boring, because it's true, all those things are things that like are a chore. You have to go through all these. Finally, you get to the specifics of your solution. Your great idea will have data entities, things that you use for manipulating your and creating your function, and finally the application, which actually plays with that. So that's why software as a service, a good 10 years ago, yeah, it was an interesting concept, but good luck making that happen, because you had to do all these. Now, let's zoom out. And let's make... Oops. Yesterday, this thing turned it off, so I thought they were censoring me. How many of you ever heard the term YaaS? 1, 2, 3, everybody. Yeah, our marketing is very powerful. IaaS stands for Infrastructure as a Service. What does that mean? Now we can actually say that in practical, not marketing terms. If you have a big hammer, I don't know if you saw that there is Thor playing on this other, so. And infrastructure as a service is like getting this big hammer and hitting this stack. And this stack partly disappears, meaning that there are things that are now belonging to the platform, no longer your concern. Is the AC working on the server room? Who cares? It's the problem of your hoster. It's the problem of whomever is maintaining those machines. And probably, if you're lucky, they will also manage the virtualization. However, you still have to worry about all the stuff that stays outside the surface. Let's say that if there is a patch, well, nobody is going to patch it unless it's you. So you have actually to take steps in this respect. Middleware, you want to set up a cluster? Be my guest. But you need to be an expert. Let's say that you need to understand that software, you need to maintain it, you need to own it. And that, of course, it is clearly possible. We've been doing this for a few years, but it's still short of the ideal situation. The ideal situation is, in my humble opinion, PaaS. How many of you ever heard the term PaaS? Apart from today? Okay. Interesting, not everybody put their hand. Okay. PaaS means having a bigger hammer, which I'm not going to draw, but you can imagine it. A bigger hammer which basically pushes the totality of the details of a platform down. In other words, the things that remain outside are the things that are specific to your business. So if I am a platform provider, and I am, because Microsoft, I cannot dream up which entities constitute your business. I cannot write your application for you. But I can take care of everything else. When you write stuff on SQL Azure, you don't care, you should not care about the software that we use for doing a cluster, for doing the availability. So if one goes down, you may happily not have any idea. If you develop for Windows Azure, you don't have to be like a distributed system wizard and understand that you shouldn't take a dependency on the state on one instance because otherwise things do not scale or they are fragile and stuff goes down. Because the platform does not allow you to. You have those rails and the system will automatically scale. In other words, what we are doing here is giving you an operating system for the cloud. Whatever we did before was substantially, not putting anything between you and the machines. Instead, now you are no longer using resources like disks, servers, and similar. Now the abstraction level went up. Platform as a service just does that. Gives you an operating system for the cloud. This is great. So at this point, this is no longer a problem, right? Now at this point, if we want to do SaaS, that's very easy. So let's do it. Let's imagine that we have one ISV who has its own solution already. And this solution is classic on-premise software. So we have this application, and this application is actually good for being transformed, at least at the business level, as a software as a service application. But today is an application which is designed for to run on-premise. So here we get our wonderful cloud. And then we tell our ISV, jump, the water is fine. And the ISV is a kind of, should I? Because the point here is, it's true that the platform as a service shortens the distance of what you have to do. You no longer have to maintain a cluster. However, moving from an on-premises application to one software as a service application is non-trivial. There are various things that you may think of. Is it readable? Kind of. One thing is, I already have IP, I already built this application. I don't want to throw it away. It costed money, and I already know how it works. My people already know how to deploy that. I don't want to throw it away. And of course, I want to spend as little as possible. All my friends know that. And then many other things. Let's say that shifting to a different model means that now that I just have a URL, what's my relationship with my customer? I don't know. The customer will go somewhere, will describe what they want for my application, and then I will make this application happen somehow. I will allocate something for them. We'll see in details what that means. But now I no longer have this, not just relationship, but knowledge. Like I don't go into their environment and see what they have installed. So I needed to understand how that works. I also needed to understand how I can build these instances from nothing, basically. Normally, my model is I go there, I install my application, I know how to customize it, and things will work. Here, instead, I have to do more automated processes, which I may not be familiar with. And of course, now that I have a number of different customers in the same place, how can I make sure that they don't peek into each other? Like a classic situation in which I have one customer and their competitor, perhaps in the same database. I really don't want a competitor to see the data of the other. Like, it's normal. You have to maintain a certain level of isolation, and that is something that if your business was on-premise, you never had to do. And then, of course, since me being me, the identity is a super important point. How do I authenticate people so I can keep stuff separated? And finally, that's the most important of all, is how do I get paid? Because before, like, I'm physically going to them and installing stuff, so it's hard for them to be unavailable. Instead, in this case, how do I actually automate this part of a relationship? That's definitely non-trivial. Well, we wanted to find out ourselves. So we put ourselves exactly in your shoes. We took existing IP that we had, one sample, which I wrote back in 2008 for one PDC presentation, which then we reused through, so we also went through various iterations. We used them as a keynote demo and similar. And we said, okay, what would it take this and transform it in a software as a service solution? And this scenario is super simple, but it shouldn't even matter what it does. This is one application which substantially helps you to create a shipment. You want to send a package, you go through a wizard, and at the end of a wizard, you get a label which you stick on the package and you send it. It's very easy. But the solution that we have to come out with has to be independent from that. We are searching for a pattern for making this kind of work. So I'm not going to even go through one instance of this. I will just tell you that is what it does, but it doesn't matter. We want to make the generic tab. And of course, it was interesting because you guys think that Microsoft is one big transactional monolithic thing with the Borg Queen somewhere, and we know instantly everything about everybody else. That is absolutely not the case. I am in the evangelism team, which is different from the product team. So I know where they live, so I can wait outside of their office and grab them and say, hey, come, let's have coffee. And that's an advantage that I have in respect to you guys. But in general, I am a different place. So I could simulate pretty well your experience. And in fact, the goals that we had here were give you a chance to play with this, and you'll see that, in fact, this sample is designed to be used with minimal effort on your side, provide you with a boilerplate code for pretty hard stuff. Like, for example, you want to automatically create a new instance on the fly. If you never used Windows Azure, it may seem no big deal. If you ever used Windows Azure, you may ask yourselves, whoa, how did you guys manage to do it? Well, here we have a code. But another super important thing was to give engineering feedback. Because if you go on a meeting and you tell them, it would be nice if we could do X, and they can tell you, oh, yeah, you can absolutely do it, and hand wave. If instead you give them the code and say, okay, show me, the discussion is much, much smoother. So that's pretty much what we have done. And now I'm going to inflict to you all the details of this for the rest of the hour. And in fact, this one is not exactly a demo, but it's just for showing you how to get there. If you go to www.fastlane.com, fabricamshipping.com, you get to this page where we give you a quick description of the sample, and then you have a free items. You can download a couple of source code packages, which I'll go into the details in a short, and you can just go to the live demo where we have one instance of this thing always running, and if you want to play with that, for at least for the easiest case, the only thing you need is a browser. And now here you'll hear what is happening on the other side, so that you'll exactly understand what's happening and how to replicate it in your system. So our solution pattern. Basically, we had to move from one application to an application factory, because if your IP is one application that you normally go and install to the place, well, in a sense, you are doing a factory. But it's still like, it's not an industry. This is a craftsmanship. Let's say that you take your bits, you go to your customer, you install them, you change a couple of things for making it work, and there you have it. So your asset is the application. Here, you need to multiply these for the scale that you want to achieve, and you have to automate it. Let's say that you don't have the people going at the customer. It's the customer coming to you. So this is one pattern. This is not the pattern. So your experience may vary, but this pattern worked for us. So it's worth sharing. The center of the universe for a software as a service application is the set of subscriptions. I'd say customers, but in reality, for the application, it's best to think of subscriptions. A subscription is a representation of your relationship with a given customer, the list of all the options that they want, so that you know how to customize the instance for them. And that's where you keep like the heart of your application. Everything else is, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the REST concept. Let's say that this one is the resource, the list of resources. Everything else in the system is a representation of those. Of course, at a higher level of abstraction. And then, in the platform as a service, you have a set of assets, like computing power, database, connectivity. I don't know. How many of you guys saw the Christian presentation in this room just the last hour? Okay, great. So you saw the connectivity, service bus, and similar. Those are all resources, high-level resources, that I can play with. Those are basically building blocks that I can put together. And then your existing IP, your application, is substantially one of those building blocks. So instead of being the resource, it's something that you use for deriving your resource. Then what you need for making this work are two key elements. One is this thing. I really didn't know how to represent that, so I got this exotic clip art. And it's what we call a provisioning engine. This provisioning engine is a substantially a long-running process which keeps an eye on your subscriptions, and when a new one comes or when something changes, orchestrate all those building blocks and put together one application according to your specifications. The power of this is that if you build it generic enough, you can create any solution. You just create the space of a solution, and then there you will actually just make this happen. And then, of course, you need some way for people to interact with this. So some kind of generic UI engine, both for your customers, so that your customers can come and subscribe, so they put their, they feed their subscription model, and they get back the application, and also for your administrators for running this thing. If you design this generic enough, once again, you can have a portfolio of applications, and you actually go through that. So this is fine and dandy, but it's also fairly abstract. So let's make it slightly more concrete. Okay, here you wanna, I imagine that you get what's the meaning of those bands. All the blue stuff is the stuff that lives in Windows Azure. All the green stuff lives in the App Fabric. I can tell you in advance, it's just the access control service in this case. And all the, I don't know how to define that color, mauve, probably, Bordeaux. In Italian it would be Bordeaux. is a SQL Azure. So how did we actually do this? And this one is actually not hard. Well, of course, the long running process is a worker role. And let's put this in the worker role. Then the subscription lives in a storage account. We don't need the transactions here. So a storage account works well. And since we added it, here we have also other things, such as, for example, our building blocks. Our original application, we put it in storage, so that it's building block that we can manipulate. And also, our application had a database, naturally, like every modern app has one. And so the schema of a database goes there, not the instance. If in storage, it's just the schema. And then, of course, here, let's have some room. The UI goes in a worker role. Sorry, web role. Good. That's pretty much it. This is all our big architecture. Well, said like that, it sounds easy. The source code of this solution is 58,000 lines of code. So it's kind of... But still, conceptually, that's very straightforward. And in fact, if I go on my good friend Visual Studio, let's hope it will be a friend today. In certain mornings, is less of a... Here I have my solution. And I won't spend much time in that because, of course, we don't have a couple of months to go through all the details. But just for giving you a feeling of the infrastructure. Specifically, what I just represented is what you would see in here. Actually, let me just open everything and then give you literally a screenshot. So here in this folder, I have all the things that I actually deploy in Windows Azure. And let me grab it. Copy. Yeah, building the slides while presenting them is kind of interesting. And here I have this list of projects which represent precisely what I just mentioned. So let me just put ties to that and then I'll zoom again. Red. So I have two roles which in fact live in the same, that are the web role and the worker role. And then I have my subscription, which of course isn't there. And then, together with all these, I also have one instance of the application, which is already there, just for the small business applications. And you'll see in a while what that means. In this system, just for showing that our solution is generic enough, we created substantially two modes, two potential architectures. One designed for working with small businesses. Another designed to work with enterprises. The reason for which we did that is that we wanted to show the range of the trade-offs that you can do. For example, at the beginning, one of the problems I mentioned is, how do I reuse my IP? When you have one application which is designed to stay on premises, this application is typically mono-tenant. How many of you guys know what multi-tenant means? Quite a number. Well, I didn't know until recently because it has a very specific meaning. Like very often you think you know and instead you don't. At least it was the case with me. But the point here, and I'll go into the details in a moment, but the point here is when you have one application that goes on-premise, the customer is the customer to which you are selling it. So you don't have any problems with keeping things separated and similar. So before the cloud, before this robotic arm that can take building blocks and put stuff together, moving to a software as a service model meant taking your application, wearing latex gloves, and shoving your hand deep in the code so that you could change it to be multi-tenant, so that everybody would have the illusion to be the only user, the only customer of the application. It's kind of reminds me one girlfriend I had back at the university. I thought I was the only user instead. That was a classic example of multi-tenant. And instead, like, you need to create this level of isolation so that everybody can do the job of the application without really being disturbed by the fact that others are running. And now, thanks to what I just said, I have this image that I cannot take away from my head. If you see me crying, you know why. And instead, with the cloud, we have a possibility with these building blocks that we can use for changing stuff around. We can actually still maintain the structure that you have with your application, so not making the application multi-tenant, and yet sell it as a service. This, the downside of this is that it's going to cost you. But it's interesting because, of course, this gives you a chance of doing a trade-off. So that's one of the angles that we are using. What we call our enterprise edition is something which shows you how to do that, how to reuse your IP almost exactly as it is and still sell it as a service. And without further ado, let's actually take a look at it. Now this one, we can skip it. So let's actually go to the place. Here what you see is our application. It's running on Windows Azure, of course, and if you have a connection, you are welcome to get there as well. If you want to do the same thing I'm doing, by all means, so that you can see that there is no trick. So here we have those two options. I can sign up to be a customer with as enterprise level, or I can sign up as small business. The numbers that you see here are absolutely random. I literally threw a couple of dice. So please, please, please do not use that as a reference. That's just for putting something there. So let's say that I want to choose enterprise. Now, I will show you the experience of how it works, and then later I will explain what happens behind the scenes. Otherwise, I'd ask you too much abstraction and it gets boring. So here I'm going for a process. I am in this moment the potential customer. So now I have to describe my instance so that our ISV Fabricam can create the instance for me. And the first thing I need to do is to sign up. Let's say that I need to secure this interaction because I may be sharing information that is, how to say, sensible, including the payment. So here we are using already one aspect of our platform. We are using the access control service for giving to the user the choice or whatever they want to use for signing up. Note that the experience is in the same Chrome of the application. Unfortunately, I cannot claim that I put my Italian design here. We had one designer doing that. But anyway, the point is, if you use the default in the access control service, the result is kind of like, I wouldn't say ugly, but a bit, how to say, basic. Instead of here, you can use the platform and have the platform completely disappear. Let's say that you have complete control of the experience. So let's say that I want to use Live ID, and today I'm going to be, hey, myself. Okay. So now I am, I have to say, I'm securing the session and I am one specific user. So here there is a lot of text because I am terrified of lawyers. So I'm trying to say, don't do this, don't do that. We can ignore it. What you see here is our UI engine at work. We are telling our UI engine for creating this specific subscription type, those are the steps that you need to do, and those are the information you need to gather. We'll see with the small business, which we will have a different set of tabs, less tabs, and but the system is the same, so generic pattern. So company data, those are irrelevant details. You'll see stuff appearing simply because I'm using a form filler. I am not a very good typist. And here there is another example of hiding the infrastructure. Here, I don't know what's the normative in Belgium, but I know that in Germany, you cannot save customer data outside of national boundaries. So here we are surfacing the capability of Windows Azure to choose where your stuff runs, but we are not forcing you to go to Windows Azure to play with that stuff. So again, in this session, you will not see once the Windows Azure portal or the ICS portal. We do everything wrapped into management APIs. So here is one interesting effect of using Enterprise. Since we are using Enterprise, we assume that the customer has infrastructure. They have one organization, they have users with roles and similar. So we want them to be able to do just a single sign-on. So that if they have to send a package, they just go to our address, they hit enter, and nothing stands between them and their beautifully printed label. So how do we set this up? A few years ago, we would have been it would have been a very interesting experience, interesting in the Chinese sense. And instead now, since we have all these powerful claims-based technologies, all we have to do is to just provide the description of our Active Directory Federation Services system. And I would absolutely love to go into the details of this, but then my manager seeing the registration would tell me, you did an identity session again. I told you to do a SaaS session. So I will not do that. I will just show you how it works. So here I'll just browse and set this yes. We'll grab this file. And once I hit next, the system is going to just look at my metadata. Everything is fine, and that's great. Okay, so here there is another interesting aspect. Let's say that your application tends to have three specific roles. Three roles that are application-specific, and they describe what your application can do, basically. Now, in a traditional system, you'd have to... See, I'm doing that again. I'm doing an identity talk. I apologize. Normally, you'd have, in the past, you would have gone to your customer and told them, those are the three roles that you can have. Please send me that information. Which, of course, is not always possible because the customer may not be willing to change their system or they may not be capable of doing so. In this case, instead, thanks to the use of our access control service, I can actually create a mapping between the organizational information which is coming from the customer and those roles. And this engine is generic enough that I can do it with any customer. Whatever organization structure they have, they can just self-provision all these. So here I have three roles. The creator, the manager, and the captain, the administrator. And instead of imposing to them all this claim-based identity thing, which I personally find very exciting and not that complicated, but I'm being told that not everybody drools over it. So what we are showing here is a way in which you can use that power but simplify it for the user. So here, basically, I can ask the administrator, the potential administrator of this, who do you want to be a shipping creator? And here you can say everybody, nobody, or if you want something more advanced, you can literally come here, and at this point, I expose this idea of claims. I can actually say all the people that belong to a certain group, then I want them to be shipping creators, and similar. And that's actually pretty neat and straightforward. The list of the claims that I get here has been automatically extracted from the metadata. So those attributes will be familiar to the potential customer. Every customer will see their own claims. So again, completely automated. Let me go back to everybody. And here there are a number of things that you may need for conducting your business. So for example, what do I print on my label as a sender? And here, the user has a chance of creating mappings. Imagine that this customer is Korean, and instead of a given name, they say something that I cannot pronounce. Now, the system cannot guess how to do the mapping. So here, they can completely self-provision and just make this thing happening. And again, this is pure software as a platform as a service. Let's say that normally, if you would have to do this without a high-level function, and high-level service, which just gives you the API to create those mappings, well, you'd have to own everything at the protocol level. So, pretty neat. So we are happy with the defaults. And at the end, you just get to a summary of all the various things that you decided. There is a PayPal integration, which I may show later, but for the time being, just know that in the code, if you wanted to integrate your system with PayPal, there's a library that you can reuse for doing the same. And now when I hit subscribe, now the system grabs everything, all the information that I gave, sends them to the subscription system, and now the process begins. And what you can see here is something that probably you wouldn't actually do if you'd be creating Visa, but since this is a sample, we want to show what happens behind the scenes. And so here you have all the various phases for which the subscription would be analyzed and your application created, deployed, and installed. Now, I'm actually not going to do that because that would take about 20 minutes and manual intervention. But what I'm going to show you instead is one customer which I already created and already an enterprise customer already there. And you can do exactly the same because we give you a package which simulates the environment of this customer. So instead of setting up your own Active Directory, you can download this little thing which we call, with some emphasis, the Enterprise Companion, which substantially is just a set of assets that you can use for simulating this enterprise customer. And we already created a corresponding subscription so that you can play with the subscription and see how it works. And what do we have in this package? Let's go and let's hope that I actually installed that. Yes, I did. What I have in here is simply a set of assets. Mainly I have one utility which simulates Active Directory Federation services so that you don't have to install the entire thing. And then I have a client for demonstrating automated OAuth calls, which I'm not going to show you because we will not have time. But if you are interested, after this, you can come and I can show you what that means. In other words, when we create the new subscription, not only we create a URL that you can use for hitting it, but we also create a number of endpoints that are just for you, so that you, if you have your process, which you want to use, you want to extend it to automatically use the shipment, you can do that, and you can exactly reuse the same identities that you have in your system. So, pretty neat. Anyway, here, what we need to do is to turn on our Active Directory simulation. I will not go into the details again. And then, here I have like some instructions that come with Enterprise Companion, and the important thing is the URL of my fake customer. So the system here, as you can see, already created a specific URL for that customer. So at the end of the process, I got exactly that namespace. And in fact, let me do it again because it was black for some reason. See? So much better. And here we did leave the cloudapp.net pattern just because it's an example. If this would be an actual solution, you'd probably use some DNS service and give it a decent name. Also because for .cloudapp.net, you cannot get a certificate. Only Microsoft people can get certificates. I know it's unfair, but hey. No, it's not that it's unfair. It's that we are not doing a CA service. The idea is that you would use a vanity URL anyway. And instead, this other part is actually the part which represents the customer. Now, let me go to this URL. And now, of course, it shows this for what I just said. Let's say that I'm not using a certificate for this because that would be cheating. So let me just click on continue to this website. And let's see if I am fast enough. I wasn't. Ah, no, yes, I've been fast enough. So what you see here in the URL now is an address in the access control windows.net space. So I tried to access my solution. I was not authenticated. I got bounced to the access control service, which is containing all the mapping rules that I created before and the trust relationship with the simulation environment of Active Directory that I have in here. Now, as soon as I will hit ESC, I will unfreeze the time, and you'll see that we successfully single sign-on. Yeah? Magic. And what you see here, in fact, is that I wasn't presented with any username and password UI. I just got automatically single sign-on because here in my simulation, I'm sitting within my directory. So thanks to the fact that I created this single sign-on relationship, now I can just come here and everything works as is. And the claims that you see here, if you want to experiment with it, you can change them as much as you want. As you can see, Jodo. If you want to play with roles and similar and mappings, you can do it. But that's pretty straightforward. Okay. So that's how it works, the experience. Now let's take a quick look to the architecture, which is the interesting part. So here, just for saving time, I kept all the things that we had before. Now let's simulate what I've just done. Let's say that I am a customer and I live on my directory. I have an extremely long neck for some reason. And I go through the experience. I sign up and I go through the wizard that you have just seen. And what you haven't seen is that eventually I actually also go and pay, but you'll have to trust me on that one until I show it to you. So at the end of this, I get to this screen where I have all the various steps. And it says you are at the first step of this. Now, in this case, what needs to happen is that since this is the enterprise case, I want to create an exclusive instance where I will run the instance for my enterprise customer. I don't want the enterprise customer to share that instance with anybody. This is going to be absolutely exclusive. So what happens is that at the end of the process, here there is your administrator with a cigarette, which receives one notification, which says, hey, guess what? We have a new customer. Go, deploy something for them. And so here, there is one of the limitations of Windows Azure today. Today, you cannot spin a new hosted service automatically. There are some reasons for that, which I won't go into. But today, if you want to spin a new service, you've got to do it by hand. So the job of this guy is to actually create a new web role with a specific name. In the notification, it gets something which says, hey, this is the URL of this new tenant, which is not really a tenant, it's a subscriber. And then, once he has done that, he is out of the picture. He wasn't enthusiastic anyway. And what happens at this point is that this provisioning engine, it will be polling for a name of that service to see if there is such a service with that name ready to be engaged with. As soon as that happens, it will grab one existing application, like our application, the code base. Then it will customize it, literally meaning going in the code, changing placeholders, changing the web config and all this stuff. So let me represent it by making a thread, and then it will package it using CSPAC. How many of you guys know what is a CSPAC? Thank you for being here. And CSPAC is the utility which Visual Studio tools for Windows Azure use for taking your Visual Studio solution and package it in a format that can be used for deploying in Windows Azure. Here, in the code, we show you how to do that from a long-running process in a worker process, so without Visual Studio. And as soon as that package is ready, we deploy it, and we start the instance. Not only that, there is something that we can do automatically, which is creating a new database, a new SQL database, SQL Azure database. And at this point, we'll do the same. We'll use the SQL script that we have for creating a new instance of a database, which will be to exclusive use of our customer. And then finally, we will use what we know about the Active Directory there for creating some assets in the access control service so that we have all the rules in there. Once all of this is done, we use one external provider, SendGrid, but detail, which sends a notification mail saying, congratulations, your instance is ready. So what happens is that this guy, at this point, will know that the instance is in place, so they will follow the address and get to that endpoint. Not authenticated, so they will be redirected here. Not authenticated yet, so here the system will know from which ADFS the user is coming. So it will come here. Here it will receive a token. The token will be sent back. All the rules that we did will be applied, meaning, okay, I see that you play this role in this organization, so you are going to be a shipping creator, for example. And finally, I will have access to this. Great. Now let's do something super quick for another customer so that you can see what I mean with complete isolation. Here you have a yellow customer. Again, with a very long neck. Today, you have long necks. Comes here, goes through the system. I will not draw the administrator, but you know he's there. And then we get another of those guys, web roles. We get another of the SQL Azure instances. And then we do exactly the same trick as before, in which we copy. Oops, I put it in the wrong place. Let me just customize this guy with yellow. And then we do the same with the access control service. In other words, we go through the same flow that we have done before. And then once the new user gets to use their own instance, what happens? Exactly what I just showed. I get to my instance, not authenticated, get the redirected here, authenticated in here, and that's it. I get my access. As you can see, there is a complete isolation between those two. That's why you don't have to change your existing code. You add your on-premise thing. It wasn't multi-tenant, but you want to sell it as a service. By all means. In this way, you can actually sell it as is. You don't have to change anything. This is something that was not possible before playing at this level of abstraction became a reality. So with platform as a service, you can do that. Of course, that means that you are paying for this because spinning an entire service is not exactly for free. In fact, let me just make some of those considerations. In which, what are the trade-offs here? We are completely isolated from all the other tenants. You have exclusive use of these. You have your own service and you have your own database. That means that if you are enormous and if you need to have a lot of power, well, I can just add instances to that. And it's very clear how I'm going to charge you because you use that stuff on your own. Nobody else is using it. You can reuse the same stuff that you have in terms of both bits, but also know-how. Because here, changing one deployment means applying what you already know about your application. Those are the places that you would normally use when you are doing a new deployment. Well, here you just do it before creating the Windows Azure package. And it's the code to do that instead of your people. So, again, reuse the know-how. And clarity in the billing, of course. And federated SSO, I won't even begin to describe how awesome that is. This is the actual process that we follow for the provisioning. And normally I would put it to vote, saying, do you guys want me to go for this? But I already know that you don't. And if you are interested in the details, and some of you are, because I got a lot of questions about this, of course the slides will be available after I finish doing all the drawings. So if you want to go through the details for understanding what the code does, by all means, this is actually pretty useful. How are we doing on time? 15 minutes. Good. Great, no? First, let me show you the small business and the architecture later. So let's try to do this small business thing. How many of you guys were in my session yesterday? Some. Okay, you saw this demo, but you didn't know what was behind. Now you're going to see the demo again, and then you will know what's behind. So finally, you'll manage to sleep. I know that tonight you were... I didn't know how it worked. So let me go back to our Fabric I'm Shipping. Let's go to the live demo. And this time let's pick the small business. Now in the small business edition, we call it a small business, but not really. Like I could have called, any company that doesn't have a directory or that wants to spend less than the other applies. You don't need to be a small business. But anyway, detail. So let's sign in as Adam. And you'll see here that the list is significantly shorter. Let's say that I have just my company data steps, one step about defining the users and then the confirmation. And this is the same engine. It's generic enough that it can render different things. So the first step is exactly the same as before. The next one is different. So in this case, we assume that the company does not have a directory. So now I am a customer, I'm signing up. My employees are not in a directory. So imagine that I am, I don't know, in a franchise like Burger King or similar. And all the people that work for me are students. And the churn is very fast. So it doesn't make sense for me to add them in the directory. I will use their existing emails and their existing accounts on the web. So Facebook, Live ID, and similar. So here, what I can do is define an entry for each of my employees, define the roles, so the shift manager, and so on, and then provide their email so that the system can send one invitation email so that they can activate the account here. So I'm not forcing them to have an Active Directory. I'm allowing every user to use whatever they want. But as administrator, I still retain the power of assigning roles to those guys. That's pretty neat. So let's add myself and, of course, everything. And let's add this other guy. Okay, I have two users now. So normally here I would also show you the integration with PayPal, but we are a bit short on time, but it's very, very straightforward. Here I would just, well, you know what, I'll do it anyway. Let's say that here I want to pay for my instance month by month. PayPal allows you to make a prepayment in which I agree as a customer to have a Visa ISV charge me once per month for some time, and at that point I would just have the system automatically charge me once a month. But let's be careful. I want to pay hand by hand. So once I hit subscribe, now the system, before doing anything, it will go back to PayPal and it will offer me to pay. Here in PayPal, we have one test store. This is a sandbox. So even when you will see the credit card number, don't rush to copy it because it's fake. Yeah, you laugh, but at a certain other time, I saw one guy starting writing. He said, "No, no, relax. I know that you guys are not like that, but just in case." And so here, I'm just adding details of one credit card that I want to use for making this payment. I hit review and continue. The system verifies the credit card details. And it says, "Okay, do you really want to pay?" "Sure." And once I hit pay, the system will do the charge and then bounce me back to Fabricam Shipping. Fabricam Shipping will use the PayPal API for verifying that I actually paid. And once I've done, it will start the deployment. This deployment is automated. I don't need to have the guy with a cigarette to go and create anything. Because here I'm just adding one entry in my multi-tenant system. So let's actually just see what worked. Here you'll see that the steps are much shorter. Let's say I have less things to do. We'll see in a moment why. And here everything is green. Let's say that in 12 seconds, I got my new instance. So let's go to Hotmail to see that I received my invitation. Every time I'm terrified that it will be my personal inbox and there will be something inappropriate. Luckily, that wasn't the case. So here I got one automatic email which contains one activation URL. And this is just an MVC app, and that is an activation action. That unique GUID is associated to, oops, why did that happen? Do I have the internet still? I'm sorry, let me do this again. The demo gods decided that they hate me. Yeah, you know, this looks like the internet is not exactly... No, Facebook, I can't open it now. But I can open Twitter. Twitter works. So don't tell me that Windows Azure is done. Hey, it's just that. Excellent. See, the subscription, like literally this thing is done. So unfortunately, I can't show you this the demo because my application died for some reason. Let me see if windowsazure.com. Let's see if the portal is alive. The portal is alive. So let me just clean up the browser. Just in case. Let's go back to Hotmail. Live login, sign in. Come on, come on, come on. I can do it. Let's go for Gmail as well, just in case. Yeah, here there is clearly something fishy going on with the network. Who is interfering with this just for the pleasure of seeing me embarrassed? Oh, well, I can't spot anybody. No, okay. See, also Gmail is not working. So it's not that it's me, it's me. There is clearly... Oh, no. Okay, now it works. Directing. Please activate your account. So here I got the same link that I got before. And this time, it works. So also see, I'm not getting images. So clearly there is something wrong with the connectivity. So please don't tweet, hey, Windows Azure failed. It's the network. And please wait. Yeah, I'm waiting. So let's make another little attempt. And after this, I'll just move on. Luckily, yesterday I did exactly the same demo and it worked beautifully. So I don't feel too guilty. See? Not even Hotmail. Okay, so sorry guys, network is not working. So later we'll try again to see if the network goes, but for the time being, let me tell you what happened, or at least to a point, and then what should have happened. Here we have our user. Let's make it red. But this time the user is not associated to any specific thing. Like he can use all of those social providers. Goes through the processing here and successfully get to the point in which the application gets deployed. But here, what really gets deployed is simply a new database, because for some reason we decided that we wanted to show you that you can do hybrid systems, like you can have one part multi-tenant and the other exclusive. So we kept the database exclusive, and here it is. And then here what we did was simply to add another tenant. Let's say that we just added another set of attributes about this new tenant, so that our application here, which this time we actually modified for being multi-tenant. And if you see in the code, you can actually see links to the file that we didn't change and actual files for the files that we changed. So you can see exactly the delta between mono-tenant and multi-tenant. And so that's why it's so fast to redeploy. We just created that little new entry. And so a set of new actions become available at that point. Let's say that you have the same root, which is the application for everybody, this instance which is running for everybody. And when we add a tenant, we just add the name of a tenant as one action. And from that moment on, we can actually verify that the user is coming there, and we can customize on the fly that portal so that the user has the illusion that they are the only users of that stuff. And here I could pull out another customer, but you'd see me just add another step of this one. So let me just see if a network came back. Network, network, network. Network, 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 network. No. It seems that the network today is showing some fatigue. It is the last day of the conference, after all. Going to Gmail. going one, going twice. Yep, it just didn't go. Okay, so trade-offs. Why would we want to do this? Well, in the case of a small business, here we are showing, like before for the enterprise, we have showed brute force. Like we don't want to change anything of our existing IP, and we want to manage like big customers. So using this trick of creating an exclusive instance for every customer, we can achieve that. Here we are going to on the thrifty side of the house. So we want to actually share resources. This means that our trade-off brings us to change the source code of our application to make it multi-tenant. At that point, we can actually share resources. We can have one application which runs for everybody. And then when we add a tenant, we just do something on the side. As you can see, the naming schema is the classic multi-tenant in which I have the application slash the tenant, whereas before it was tenant.cloudapp.net. We kept the exclusive SQL Azure database, mainly because we wanted to show that it's possible, but also because now we have a database of users, which before we didn't have. And so if you have an exclusive database, you can actually keep users from customer A completely separated, physically separated from the users from customer B. Now, there are techniques for using even the same table and still maintaining isolation, but it's more complicated. Instead of here, you can just use the platform and not worry about it. So you don't have to learn all those steps. Of course, it's a good idea, but you are not forced to. Then we can reuse existing identities, which is always very nice. And there is, I would say, some custom code required because, as we said, you now have to be multi-tenant. You spend much less because, of course, you are reusing stuff. However, it also gets harder to understand what's happening. So if one customer has a spike and starts using you big time, then everybody else who is in the same application will suffer somehow. And if you want to create a billing schema which takes the usage into account, well, you can do it, but it's pretty hard. Let's say that you have to keep track of who's doing what. It's one single application. Usually you don't want to use transactions because they are costly. And also they are, it really kills the performance. On the other hand, if you want to charge, you will want to be as precise as possible. Otherwise, people will rightfully complain. So it's not an easy problem to solve. And one alternative is that you can have bucketings. Let's say that instead of having one app, you can have more than one, and then you can assign people there depending on where they stand in terms of usage. And of course, if you'd be using vanity URLs, it wouldn't matter exactly where you end up as long as you change the mapping as you migrate the application here and there. Interestingly enough, migrating the application just means taking the bunch of lines which describe that user, that tenant, and move it wherever you want. You don't have to actually change anything, which is pretty neat. Much simpler, still not exactly your cup of tea. So let me close with just a bit of a summary of what we have just done. So what we heard are mainly advices which derive from our experience. I tried not to go too much into the details because only a few of you guys played with Windows Azure, but I hope that at least I gave you the pointers to the feature that you can use when you want to implement this on your own, and especially a way of exploring our sample so that you can go and actually grab the pieces of code. The main point is you move from one instance to a factory, something which is capable of spitting out customized instances. And we have seen what that means in terms of infrastructure. We have seen a pattern that you can use. Not the only one, but one that works. There are many trade-offs that you may want to do, and you usually do those for business reasons. And what's important is that Windows Azure does not impose you any model. You can slide through the two ends of the spectrum as much as you want. Like you can reuse exactly your IP as is and then pay for creating exclusive instances. Or you can change your code and then spend very little because you can put everything in one instance. You can keep stuff completely separated, or you, if you have expertise for creating distributed systems, you can do things on your own. You can play with identities from web. You can do single sign-on. You can mix the two things. I didn't do it in the sample because that would be confusing, but nothing prevents you from allowing one tenant to do both. Perfectly possible. And similar. When you don't have a capability, you can ask others to do that. We don't have a payment system in Windows Azure, so I just picked up the phone, called my friends in San Francisco, PayPal, and we put something together. I literally did that. I'm not just making this up. And for the mail, instead, we searched around. There was a provider that was reasonably cheap, and we are using that. Check out this sample. It's really big, but it has a lot of things in there. And if you have questions about this specific part, I have to run to The Hague, but I'll hang around at least for 15 minutes, so we can chat. And with that said, thank you for your patience.